In a country the size of Western Europe, a war of resources has raged for the last 8 years and cost at least 4 million lives. I'm talking about the Congo, and the resources are minerals used in the manufacture of electronic gadgets, as well as diamonds, gold, tin, copper, and cobalt. And joining me to talk about the situation in the Congo, the current situation, as well as the history, is Maurice Carney. He is the executive director and co-founder of Friends of the Congo. He has been working with Congolese in their quest for self-determination and human dignity for over a decade. He has a master's degree in geography and has been pursuing a PhD degree in political science at Howard University with a focus on Africa and black politics. And the Friends of the Congo is a collaborative effort of people of African ancestry and others of goodwill who believe that the vast potential of the Democratic Republic of the Congo can be realized with strong support from the international community. I'm very pleased to be joined again by Maurice Carney, Executive Director and Co-Founder of Friends of the Congo. Hello, Maurice.
Hello, George. Thank you very much for having Friends of the Congo on this evening engage in a dialogue and an exchange with your listening audience.
No problem. Thank you for taking the time. Maybe we could begin with kind of maybe just a little more information about your group, Friends of the Congo. Then we'll get into the current situation and delve into the history after that.
Well, the Friends of the Congo is a recently formed organization, even though the members have been working with the Congo issue for over a decade. And basically what we are is a partner for progressive forces inside the Democratic Republic of the Congo, working to educate, mobilize, support not only in the United States but throughout the globe for the Congolese people. One of the problems in the Congo is that the affairs of the Congo have really never been that of the Congolese people. They've never really had control of their country, and it's because of in part because of international forces that have been arrayed against them. So they thought, in order to address that imbalance, that they would reach out to the international community and join with progressive forces to tell their story, to shine a light on the situation inside the country, and to assist them in mobilizing the global community to rid the Congo of negative external influences so that the people can actually control their resources and, by extension, control their destiny.
Now, there's been a war going on there, a war of resources, essentially, for the last 8 years. And, as I mentioned in the beginning, has cost at least 4 million lives. Can you give a little more detail on that situation? Who are some of the players in this conflict, and what are some of the, aside from the loss of 4 million lives, there's also serious human rights abuses. Maybe you can give us an overview of the more current picture.
Sure. The source of the conflict in the Congo today dates back to 1996-1997. When the 30-year dictatorship of Mobutu Sese Seko was overthrown by rebel forces coming from the east of the country that were supported primarily by Rwanda and Uganda, which are neighboring countries. Once Rwanda and Uganda and the rebel forces overthrew Mobutu in 1997, Laurent Désiré Kabila took power in the Congo. He ruled for a number of years, right up through 2001. But in 1998, he had fallen out with his sponsors, primarily Rwanda and Uganda. They wanted to exercise more control over the Congo, and Laurent Désiré Kabila resisted. So in 1998, Rwanda and Uganda started another rebel movement to try and remove Kabila from power. And it was that 1998 war that actually spurred the mass killings and the tremendous wreaking of tremendous havoc in the Congo that resulted in over 4 million Congolese dying, according to the British journal Lancet. They did a study just in 2005, said over 4 million Congolese died as a result of the conflict, which in fact is the largest number of deaths in the world since World War II as a result of conflict. In addition to those 4 million Congolese who have died, there's been tremendous human rights abuses that's been committed not only by rebel forces, but also by foreign forces coming from Rwanda and Uganda. And one of the key instruments of oppression is the raping of women, ranging from little girls to mothers, even to grandmothers, and in some instances, the raping of boys. And up to 30 to 40,000, according to Amnesty International, 30 to 40,000 rapes have been committed as an act of violence and degradation against Congolese, the Congolese people, particularly women, but also in some cases little boys.
And again, who's committing these rapes, and what's the motive?
Interestingly enough, the rapes have been committed by rebel forces. Those are forces who are trying to control different parts of the country because of the resources that are in those parts of the country, primarily the eastern part of the Congo. The rapes are also being committed by external forces, troops coming from Rwanda and Uganda. Our rapes are also being committed by the Congolese forces themselves who are fighting against the rebel groups. So that's another group that's committing rapes against the women. And to add insult to injury, the United Nations has 17,000 troops in the Congo to protect the Congolese people. And those troops have also committed rapes against Congolese women. So the Congolese have just been abused from all sectors, whether you're talking about their neighboring countries, rebel forces inside the country, the government troops, and even the United Nations troops who've gone there to protect the Congolese people.
Now, this situation in the Congo, this war, has been repeatedly painted in, if it's covered at all in the U.S. media, as an internal kind of internal African implosion, like something that's just happening within Africa and not really a concern of ours. What are the connections between, you know, the quote West and the U.S. and Europe and what's happening there?
Well, the conflict in the Congo is directly and inextricably linked to Western corporations, Western governments, and the scramble for the natural resources of the country. A Canadian public company had reported that the mineral resources of the Congo is estimated to value $24 trillion. That's just the mineral resources. Now, to give you an idea of what $24 trillion is, that's the gross domestic product of both the European Union and the United States put together. So, and the Congo also has the largest reserves of untapped minerals in the entire world. So it's a prize for those corporations, those countries who need the strategic resources of the Congo, such as coltan or columbite tantalite, the diamonds, the gold, cassiterite or tin, cobalt, copper. That's what's driving the conflict inside the Congo. So there's a mad scramble for those resources.
And what are some of the connections, the direct connections between, well, you say there's a mad scramble for the resources.
That's right.
What are some of the direct connections between the U.S. and other, quote, Western countries and that mad scramble for resources?
To give you one classic example, as I shared with you earlier, that the dictator, Mobutu Sese Seko, who had been in power for almost four decades, really at the behest of the United States, because in when Congo had its first elected prime minister in 1960, the U.S., in concert with Belgium, France, the United Nations, England, worked to assassinate their leader, Patrice Lumumba, and subsequently installed Mobutu, which ruled the who ruled the Congo for 4 decades in a brutal dictatorship. And so when he was overthrown in 1997, just before he got overthrown by Laurent Desiré Kabila, one major mining company called American Mineral Fields, which is based in Hope, Arkansas, and this was at the time 1996-97, when Bill Clinton was in office. So American Mineral Fields, based in Hope, Arkansas, before Mobutu had even been overthrown, started providing jets and financial resources to the rebel regime in exchange for mineral concessions, even before Kabila had gotten into power. So this is one classic indication of a Western corporation that's been involved in the conflict, and the primary reason behind the involvement is to get access to mineral concessions. You also have other American and global companies. You have Ashanti Gold. The Human Rights Watch came out with a report in 2005 which documented the illegal exploitation of gold in the Congo and tied Ashanti Gold, which in fact is a South African company, into that illegal exploitation of the gold resources. You also have in 2001, United Nations have done three classic reports. They've done more than three, but three classic reports documenting the illegal exploitation of the natural resources of the Congo, in which they named a number of Western companies, ranging from Cabot, Cabot Corporation, which is a coltan processing firm based out of Texas. And the former head of Cabot is now the current head of the Secretary of the Department of Energy in the Bush administration. You have Kemet, which is a company out of the Carolinas, is another processor of coltan that was cited in the 2001 UN report that documented the illegal exploitation of the natural resources of the Congo. You also have the exploitation of diamonds. Maurice Templesman, a consort of Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis, has been involved in the Congo for a long time. You have even Pat Robertson, the evangelical minister in the 700 Club. He also owned diamond mines in the Congo under the Mobutu regime. You can even go back in American history to the Rockefellers, Guggenheim, all had economic interests in the Congo. So you have a long history of American corporations and individuals having an economic interest in the Congo. In fact, the Manhattan Project, leading up to during World War II, where the bombs were dropped in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the uranium to for those bombs came out of the Congo. So there's a long history going way back to the start of the 20th century, right up to today, of American involvement in the Congo in terms of trying to utilize the resources of that country for the benefit of America.
When you speak of American companies being involved in illegal exploitation of, you know, some of these things like diamonds and gold and such, can you explain what you mean by illegal exploitation?
Well, this comes straight out of directly from United Nations studies and studies by Global Witness, International Crisis Group, Human Rights Watch. They've all, even the Congolese government, its parliament, set up a commission called the Lutundula Commission, where they've studied the transactions that have taken place between mining companies in particular and rebel groups inside the Congo. So what they've done is they've looked at these contracts and saw that the contracts were established with rebel groups that serve the interest of the rebel leaders and the corporations. but not the interest of the state or the Congolese people. And these contracts, more times than not, were drafted up with groups whose only legitimacy was their guns. That is to say that they controlled certain areas through military means and through force, and these corporations went in and established economic relations, contracts with these rebel groups, which were not representative of the state of the Congo, but only represented themselves and the area that they controlled. So that's the source of the illegal nature of the contracts that have been established. And in fact, the Lutundula Commission, a commission coming out of the Congolese Parliament, called for the abolishing of all the agreements that have been established during the period of conflict, ranging from 1996 right up to the present, because those contracts were considered to be illegal and worked against the interests of the Congolese people. In fact, they've even gone so far as to call them thievery rather than actual legitimate contracts that's been established.
And in addition, some of these rebel groups, of course, they're not the only ones, as you mentioned earlier. There's a lot of people committing the rapes that you talked about, but they've also been responsible for many rapes and killings and other human rights abuses. So, you know, having contracts with them, I can see how that would be problematic as well.
Right, and that's right. And in addition to that, one of the things that your listening audience should understand, according to many of these mining companies that go into these conflict areas, have to be insured because they have investors and they have property and capital that they're investing. So their investment is usually insured by the World Bank. And one of the problems that has arisen is that one mining company, for example, called Anvil out of Australia, was working to using its trucks to transport troops that were committing human rights abuses against the Congolese people. Now, that's in direct contradistinction with World Bank regulations. They're not allowed to provide insurance for any companies that are involved in human rights abuses or the killing of individuals. So that's yet another example of how the nexus exists between the illegal exploitation of the Congo's resources and human rights abuses that are being committed on the ground today.
If you could draw kind of a general overview of the direct connections between foreign nations coming in for these resources and the war that's happening, that, as we've already mentioned, has taken the lives of at least 4 million Congolese since 1998. What are some of the direct connections between Western nations and those of us in these nations consuming these resources that come from the Congo and the war that's happening? Are they really connected, or would this war be happening anyway? Can you kind of...
Right. No, the war would not be happening anyway, because when the resources are extracted from the soil, they're not refined in the Congo. They're not processed in the Congo. They're usually shipped out through neighboring countries like Rwanda and Uganda. And from the neighboring countries, they're then sent, transported to Western nations and some Eastern nations as well, but in large part Western nations, to be processed. So when you look at a mineral resource like coltan, for example, or the scientific name is columbide tantalite, which is a basically mud-like, clay-like substance, which was a primary fuel for the war in early 2000, 1998 through 2000. Once that's, that raw material is refined and processed, it's had tremendous electronic conductivity. So it is utilized in particular in cell phones. The cell phones cannot really function without this coltan, without this natural resource that's been processed and refined. It's also utilized in electronic devices, your Sony PlayStation, your Xboxes, your DVD player, your CD player, your computer. It's just utilizing a tremendous amount of technological devices. So that's where you have that direct link. Now, once the rebel groups inside the country sell this natural resource to external forces, to multinational corporations, they then take the monies that they get from the sale of these resources and use them to purchase weapons so that they can continue to control larger areas, terrorize and displace people, and actually commit human rights abuses. So this is a vicious cycle that exists. The rebel groups mine the natural resources, sell it to the Western nations or Western corporations. Western corporations provide them with a capital so that the rebel groups can actually purchase weapons and continue to wreak havoc on the country and the people.
Now, I want to talk about what folks can do about this, but first I want to delve just a little bit more into the history. The Congo does have a long history of being pillaged and the people being used, basically being abused in this rush for natural resources. And I'm wondering if we could go back, you know, you can choose where to start, but
sure.
There is a long history of this, including an overthrow that was of a democratically elected leader in 1960. But you can go back before that. But just wherever you want to start, if you just give us some rundown of some of the history of the Congo.
Sure, I would love to do that. And I would also like to, before I go into the history, just to put a cap on your question about the connection between the natural resources and the usage of modern products. There was an article published in the Independent Online just recently, back in May, and there is a quote from it that I'd like to pull for your listening audience.
Please do.
And this is what it says. It says, "This war has been dismissed as an internal African implosion. In reality, it is a battle for coltan, diamonds, cassiterite, and gold, destined for sale in London, New York, and Paris. It is a battle for the metals that make our technological society vibrate and ring and bling. And it has already claimed 4 million lives in 5 years and broken a population the size of Britain's. No, this is not only a story about them. This, the tale of a short journey into the long Congolese war we in the West have fostered, fueled, and funded, is a story about you." I thought that so eloquently captured the link between how we live in this modern society, technologically advanced society, and the connection with the loss of lives inside the Congo. Now, mm-hmm. In regard to the history of the Congo, as I shared with you at the outset, the affairs of the Congo have never really been the affairs of the Congolese people. A point of departure could be 1885, the Berlin Conference. At that conference, where you had European nations gathering pretty much to decide among themselves who would control what on the African continent. The Congo was given to King Leopold II of Belgium and as his own personal property. Now, you have to understand the Congo is the size of Western Europe, 80 times the size of Belgium. And King Leopold II had total and absolute rule over this swath of land. And within a 23-year period, from 1885 to 1908, as a result of his reign over the Congo, his rule over the Congo, half the Congolese population had been decimated. At least 10 million Congolese were killed, primarily because the king used forced labor, brutal means to extract, at that time, the wonder mineral, which was rubber and even ivory, out of the Congo. And his rule was so brutal that international outcry came about as a result of the atrocities that were being committed in the Congo. And in fact, it was that international outcry that led to the modern-day human rights movement. So you can trace the modern-day human rights movement directly to the Congo and the genocide that was committed in that country under King Leopold II. In fact, he was he had such a brutal rule that he had to give up his personal rulership of the Congo in 1908. And then it was taken over by the Belgian government, where they had a colonial administration from 1908 to 1960, where many of the same atrocities and oppression that occurred under the 23-year reign of King Leopold II also took place under the Belgian reign. It was a colonial administration. The Congolese people were suppressed. It was actually like an apartheid state, and there weren't allowed access to education. Their movement inside the country was restricted, and they had to have identification cards in order to move from one place to the next, much like the apartheid regime of South Africa. However, in 1960, the Congo got its independence and elected a nationalist and a Pan-Africanist in Patrice Lumumba. However, because of the entrenched economic interests in the country on the part of Belgium, France, the United States, Great Britain, what wound up happening was the assassination of Patrice Lumumba, because Lumumba wanted the Congo for the Congolese and the Congo for the benefit of Africa at large. And this was in direct contradiction to the interests of the Western nations. So those nations that I mentioned, as well as the United Nations, basically got rid of Mobutu, Patrice Lumumba, and then installed Mobutu for four decades, in which he just simply brutalized the Congolese people. And every time the Congolese people rose up against Mobutu, the U.S., France, Belgium, they all came to the aid of Mobutu to maintain him in power. So that's the overall history of the Congolese people. So you can see they've never had control of their country. And it's their country's always been at the behest of the international community and of international interests. And the leaders that have been put in place and kept there have served into the international community's interests and not the interests of the Congolese people.
Now, Mobutu also was said to have amassed billions of U.S. dollars, apparently $4 billion or so, which is an amount close to the country's Congo's
national
debt.
It was a tragedy.
All for himself.
All for himself. It's a tragedy. They developed a term called kleptocracy to describe the Mobutu's reign, because he had stolen so much from the state, so much that they had to call it a kleptocracy. He couldn't simply call it thievery. And what he would do, amassed the billions, $2 to $4 billion in wealth. And well, the tragic thing about it is that the United States, the World Bank, still loaned Mobutu money during his reign, knowing that he was stealing the money. And now the Congolese people are saddled with a $15 billion debt, which we hope to have erased from the books, because the Western nations that provided those loans knew that Mobutu was stealing the money, knew that he was taking the monies and purchasing ostentatious jets and palaces in France and other parts of Europe, and putting that money back into European banks to benefit Mobutu and the European bankers, but not to benefit the Congolese people.
So a good portion of this money was loans, but a lot of it was also obtained from Congolese state mining companies, right?
Absolutely.
Directly from the mines that, you know, so not only do the people of the Congo owe money to foreign nations that he stole, but they also didn't get much out of their own resources, right?
They didn't get anything out of their own resources. We often say that even if Mobutu was a brutal dictator, if he had just done something, built some roads, imagine a country the size of Western Europe has no more than about 200 kilometers of paved road. The only way to get from one part of the country to the next is by flying. There is no road infrastructure. There is no rail infrastructure. The only means of transportation for the Congolese people is to travel along the Congo River unless they walk. And the Congolese living on a per capita income of $100 per year definitely cannot not afford to fly from one part of the country to another. You have a people where 80% of the population makes less than 30 cents a day. And this is a country where studies have been done to demonstrate, to show that it has $24 trillion worth of mineral resources in the soil of that country.
So basically you have a country very wealthy in resources that is extremely poor because those resources are being pocketed by Western-backed dictator Mobutu, in, you know, before he was overthrown in 1998. And to Western nations.
Absolutely, Western nations.
Not
Western
to the people.
And some of the Eastern ones as well. India has been involved of late. Australia, definitely. China is also getting into the mix. You have South Africa. And we can't neglect the Congo's neighbors, Rwanda and Uganda. Uganda was just found culpable in the International Court of Justice at The Hague for illegally exploiting the natural resources of the Congo and committing human rights abuses. And they were told that they had to pay the Congo $10 billion in reparations. Rwanda would have befallen the same fate as Uganda. However, they claim that they were not, that the International Court of Justice did not have jurisdiction over their country, so the International Court of Justice couldn't rule against them. But you have a nexus between what we call local sycophants, Congolese who are out to enrich themselves, greedy neighbors such as Rwanda and Uganda, and Western governments and multinational corporations. This is a nexus that has kept the Congolese people down in poverty and resulted in the deaths of over 4 million Congolese since 1998.
And you're listening to 101.1 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm speaking with Maurice Carney. He is the executive director and co-founder of Friends of the Congo. Their website is simply friendsofthecongo.org. Again, they are a collaborative effort of people of African ancestry and others of goodwill who believe that the vast potential of the Democratic Republic of the Congo can be realized with strong support from the international community. And Maurice, maybe this is a good time to talk about what U.S. Citizens can do, since that's who where we're at here.
Yes.
What kinds of things, maybe you could build a foundation, just what has the U.S. generally, what has been our influence in the Congo? We've already heard quite a bit, and we
right.
participated in the overthrow of a democratically elected leader and installing a dictator and all that. What can we do about... what is our government doing, and what can we do about that, and what kinds of choices can we make as, you know, consumers of these things? I mean, I don't own a cell phone personally, but I'm sitting in the station, in this radio studio right now with a computer, the CD players, and all kinds of stuff around me that you mentioned earlier.
Right.
So what can we do here in the U.S. about the situation there?
Okay, sure. The U.S. government is doing some things right now by virtue of its support of the United Nations and its effort in the Congo. There's a mixed record there, but they're providing some financing for stabilizing the country and bringing about elections, which are going to take place on the 30th of July, which we all hope will be free and transparent elections. They won't be fair, we know that, but... Nonetheless, the Congolese have a tremendous amount of hope that they can choose their own leader this 30th of July. The Los Angeles Times published an article a few months ago, and the theme of it was, is your kitchen appliances fueling war in the Congo? So I'll take off from there. There are tremendous amount of things that the U.S. public can do. With very little effort, can make a great deal of difference to the Congolese people. Congolese people are looking for partners in the international community. Please educate yourself. You can go to our website, friendsofthecongo.org, and read Our articles there, we have reports from the United Nations, Human Rights Watch, Global Witness. Just about every report that's out there that's been written on the Congo is on our website. So these aren't things that we're saying as Friends of the Congo, but these are reports that have been done by international organizations who have been on the ground inside the Congo documenting the illegal exploitation of the natural resources. So one, educate yourself. Two, share information with people about what is taking place inside the Congo. Because the only way, imagine, the only way that 4 million people were able to die in the last 5 or 6 years without the bulk of us knowing and bulk of us being outraged is because it happened in the dark. There wasn't a light that was shining on it. And if we are sharing the information, if we are contacting our local media and asking them why they haven't covered the 4 million deaths in the Congo or what's the source of the conflict in the Congo, just a simple inquiry to your local radio station, your local television station, will make a tremendous difference. So definitely share the information with your friends, with your loved ones, with your colleagues, with your organizations, institutions that you belong to. That's number two. Number three, ask your local elected official, your state elected official, your federal elected official, what they're doing about the Congo, what they're doing in terms of policy in regard to the Congo, what kind of positive policies are being developed for the Democratic Republic of Congo. A simple letter to your local elected official, to your state elected official, or to your federal elected official would be of tremendous help. Also, the corporations that are involved in the Congo, we're working to, they've been identified, so we are organizing and mobilizing to have them share with us why it is that they're supporting, why they're still in the Congo and participating in the illegal trade. We'll give them the opportunity to respond and right the ship. But if they persist in continuing the illegal exploitation of the natural resources of the Congo, we're mobilizing internationally to lead a divestment campaign against many of these companies that are in the that are involved in the illegal exploitation. Next, you can invite Congolese to your university if you're a university student. Invite the Congolese to come and speak on campus. Invite Congolese to come and speak to your religious institution, to your organization, to your labor group, to your Rotary Club. You can contact us at friendsofthecongo.org, and we can provide you with Congolese who can come in and share with you their story. Remember, the Congolese are looking for international partners. They understand that ultimately and ostensibly the solution to their problems are going to come from Congolese, but they need partners in the international community as a result of the international forces that are arrayed against them. So they'll be open to come and speak to you and share with you what's going on inside their country and go into more detail as to how you can help. We're also forming delegations to go to the Congo. If you want to be a part of a delegation, to go and observe the elections, we'd love to have you. Simply go to our website, send us an email, and let us know that you'd like to participate in the delegation going to the Congo. And that's yet another way in which you can assist in the effort to bring about change in the Congo. And finally, the Friends of the Congo and its Congolese partners are always looking for material and financial support to keep the Congo on the forefront of the media, to let people know what's going on inside the Congo and what they can do about it. So any support that you can provide will be greatly appreciated.
Maurice, I just have one final question for you. You were talking about how folks can go there on a delegation to observe the elections in July. And earlier you mentioned that the elections will not be fair, and you know that they won't be fair, but that you support an inclusive and transparent election process. When you say that they won't be fair, are you referring to the fact that some people in the country who have, you know, got a lot of money, basically,
right,
from stealing from the people,
right,
that they have, there's no chance for fairness because of the amount of money they have? Can you
exactly
be a little more detailed?
Yes, because those the people in the government right now are made up of those rebels and individuals who've participated in the rape of the country. And they've used the transition process that has been going on for the last 3 years to enrich themselves, and now they're going to take those monies and pour it into an election campaign. So they can come up with $20, $30, $40 million to undertake an election campaign. But a grassroots person who truly represents the people has no chance of coming up with that much money. So that grassroots person, so the playing field is not level. But we believe that the Congolese people so desire change that in spite of the unlevel playing field, that they're going to make the choice that best represents their interests. And one way we can assist them in doing that is by shining the light on the process, talking about it in the media, focusing attention on it. Because, again, the only way or the main way that those who have raped and pillaged the country have been able to do so over the last few years is because they've done it in the dark. So if we can organize high-level delegations to go to the Congo, we can talk about it in the media as you're doing with this tremendous opportunity that you've given us to share with your listening audience. This is of tremendous help to the Congolese people because we're talking about it and we're shining the light on it, and this can only foster transparency.
So even though the election will, there won't be a level playing field because some people have so much more money, as if you can get outside or, you know, you can get observers in there.
Right.
From both inside and outside the country,
right,
to ensure, or at least try to ensure, that it's
right.
at least a transparent and fair process, that maybe even though someone doesn't have the money someone else does, they might have a chance. Is that
Absolutely.
Kind of the idea?
That's the idea, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Because, again, just the fact that the attention is being focused on the Congo is of tremendous help because it makes it more difficult for those in power to manipulate the process. It makes it that much more difficult. So with, for example, Time magazine doing its cover story on the Congo, with CNN doing interviews and making the current president have to respond to questions about his military raping Congolese women and children, that's of tremendous help because That's a form of accountability. Where heretofore there had been no accountability whatsoever. The rebel forces and those in government were able to exploit the Congo with impunity. But now, with the media attention getting greater, with folks forming delegations to go there, it makes all of that all of the atrocities are being committed. All the trickery that's going to be undertaken, more difficult to do.
The new media attention is good, but I noted on your website there was a response to the Time magazine article that came out on June 5th, was
June
it?
June 5th, that's right, a June 5th Time cover story.
And there was a critique of it on your website, though. Basically, could you maybe address that really quickly?
Yes, we commended Time for, first of all, for addressing the issue and putting it on its cover. But there was some obfuscation and some omitted items. Probably the key omission was the cause of the conflict in the Congo, which was the natural resources. The Time article presented the cause of the conflict as failed leadership or intransigent inter-ethnic battles. But the source of the conflict in the Congo is a scramble for the natural resources of that country. Secondly, the Time article looked at the return of mining companies to the Congo as a good thing without critically analyzing the role that the mining companies have played in the perpetuation of the conflict in the Congo. They totally omitted that. They also neglected to address the whole issue of the removal of a democratically elected president in Patrice Lumumba. They didn't present the full picture in terms of the implication of the United States, of Belgium, France, Great Britain, and the United Nations in that assassination. Even after the Belgium government had apologized about 3 years ago for its role in the assassination of Patrice Lumumba, even after almost three decades, where the Church Commission in 1975-76 Congressional Commission, which clearly laid out how it is the role that the U.S. played in the assassination of Patrice Lumumba. So those were some of the items that that Time magazine did not address. And finally, they didn't address solid prescriptions for bringing about change in the Congo, such as making sure that the elections are transparent, such as imploring the international community to call for an inclusive election process, or calling for the publishing of reports and the wide dissemination of reports that clearly documents the illegal exploitation of the natural resources of the Congo, or calling for embargoes, arms and mineral embargoes on countries like Rwanda and Uganda, who have played a critical role in the continuation of the conflict inside the Congo. So those are some of the areas in which we felt that they could have addressed and addressed forcefully and given the American public a more balanced and hopeful picture of the Congo. Because that's one thing about the Congolese, they have hope. In spite of the 4 million that have been killed, they still have hope. They know if they can choose their own leaders, they can control their own resources, their country can function as an economic engine, not only for the region and their neighboring countries, but also for the entire African continent. Because just the Congo River alone has enough hydropower to provide electricity for the entire African continent and for Southern Europe.
And again, the website for Maurice's organization, again, we're speaking with Maurice Carney, the executive director and co-founder of Friends of the Congo. Again, their website is friendsofthecongo.org. where you can read up, educate yourself about recent news as well as the history of the situation there. You can find out how you can volunteer. There's many different ways to do that. You can invite a speaker to your college, university, religious institution, organization, club, or community group. You can check out their photo gallery. You can donate there. You can read human rights groups, what they have to say about the situation. All of this you can find at friendsofthecongo.org. And I just want to thank you again, Maurice Carney, for joining me today.
Oh, it's been a great pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity for sharing with your listening audience.
Of course. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night.
Again, that was Maurice Carney, executive director and co-founder of Friends of the Congo. He has been working with Congolese in their quest for self-determination and human dignity for over a decade. He has a master's degree in geography and has been pursuing a PhD degree in political science at Howard University with a focus on Africa and black politics. Check out their website again, friendsofthecongo.org, for all the background information. Human rights reports, volunteer opportunities, ways you can get speakers to do an event here, whatever. Lots of info there at friendsofthecongo.org. Thanks so much for listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM or streaming online at freakradio.org.